How can you find, fund, and fix planet-sized problems? First, you need to be informed. And that starts here with the DOI Podcast.
What's up, everybody? Wednesday, April 13th, round 28, podcast number 28, if you're keeping track. Welcome in to the most meaningful, relevant crypto podcast conversation on the interwebs this evening. Ladies and gentlemen, we have news. We have lots of it. Food for crypto. Ethereum from POW to POS. I don't know. Mayors accepting cryptos in all kinds of regions. So we're going to get into that. We've got some educational stuff this evening. Yesterday, we learned a little bit about DAOs and what are DAOs, different types of DAOs. Today, we are going to take a deep dive into a DAO together and peruse around and look at it. So with no further ado, Corey, welcome in.
Yeah, absolutely. Good evening, Phil.
How are you doing?
Oh, I can't complain. Any day where you're above the dirt and feeling okay, it's a good day.
Yep, that is for sure. For sure. So, Corey, let's jump into it. We've got a lot to cover tonight. We're going to do, like I said, we're going to do a deep dive into a couple of DAOs Corey's lined up for us, and he's going to walk us through that. So I'm looking forward to that myself, do a little bit of education myself. So let's get into the news a little bit. You know, Rappi is one of the largest, they're a food delivery service, right? And they've just announced that they are going to start doing crypto payments. And that's a pretty interesting announcement, right? They've got like a base user base of 10 million. And so that's quite a big deal.
It truly is. I mean, quite frankly, if I had the choice, I would rather have a crypto payment than most other payments that you could receive.
Yeah. Yeah. So let me ask you this. In that kind of a move, do you think that it is the people doing the deliveries, right? The workers, do you think they're the ones that make that push or push for that even before the end user was asked to do that?
I think ultimately those organizations are managed, owned by a group of investors who are entrenched in the traditional capital worlds, and they're making the plays from a 50,000 foot view, asking themselves, one, is it going to attract more people to use the platform? They think by adopting crypto payments, are they going to increase their user base? One. Two, are they going to be able to get free marketing? Which, you know, case in point, here we are talking about it. And three, what is the cost of capital to them as opposed to taking some other form of payment? Because what a lot of people don't recognize, unless you've been a business owner, like Bill and I have, there have been times where you've looked at the end of the year at the credit card statements, anytime that you've taken payments from clients, and you look at the list and you're like, oh my gosh, $67,000 in credit card fees. It's just astronomical. And if you're looking at that and you're thinking that there's a much more cost-effective way to not have any of those fees, which in a lot of states you can't pass those fees on, or a lot of different jurisdictions around the world, you could save a ton of money. And if you're doing a lot of volume and people like being able to do it in crypto, you can save millions.
Yeah, yeah, tons. When you look at a 10 million user base, that's a lot.
Yeah, it truly is. It truly is. And I think also, too, depending on which payments that you might accept, it might be a good hedge as part of your overall fund whenever you're investing. Whenever investors are looking at which companies are going to invest in, I think I would rather, personally speaking, see an organization that has a nice mix between fiat and crypto. I would think they'd be a lot more stable depending on what the future gives us.
Yeah, interesting. We've got one of those stories coming up here in just a second too, but moving on to the next one. Growing number of regions in the world turning to Bitcoin as legal tender after El Salvador leads. So basically, what we see happening is that as some of these nations have jumped in, other nations and regions more specifically, and they even highlight in here that regions in Portugal and in Honduras are the latest to consider Bitcoin adoption. Mayors in the U.S. have begun accepting their salaries in Bitcoin, while states are still deciding whether or not to accept them as payment for taxes. How interesting is that?
Yeah, I think that is utterly brilliant. I would be the first mayor to be like, hey, if we're volunteering here, can I get mine in Bitcoin?
Yeah, no doubt. Well, you know what's kind of what I thought was really interesting about that is that sometimes we think that all of these are top-down approaches, right? And I think what we see here is there is an economic revolution happening in cryptos. And I think that right now the largest governments are trying to play catch-up, where you've got some of these local regional kind of actors that are like, no, we'll go ahead and make these moves now. So I really think that maybe it's a demonstration that the governments, the larger federal entities, are going to have to move the way that their people want to move.
Yeah, they will. And you know what the interesting thing we sometimes forget until you see a revolution like this coming about is that there is a lot more decisions that are able to be made at a city or state level than we sometimes recognize.
A ton.
Like sometimes you just think that countries work as this one big cohesive thing. But especially being from the states, every state inside the United States is like its own country. It's massive. Most of them are huge. Most of them are larger than most European countries.
Yeah.
And they have lots of resources, lots of land, and they are often very different on how they look at, you know, how they should manage all of those taxes and how they should make decisions and what should be even laws for that matter. And not only just in the state level, but there are down to cities that are vastly different, yeah, 20 miles away from each other, how they vote, how they look at things, what they think their tax structure should be like. And
that's right. One of the most blaring examples of that, I think, is Texas and Austin, Texas, right? You've got this super kind of ultra conservative state. And then you get Austin right in the middle of it, and you see some of the things that they do in Austin. It's like, well, that doesn't really line up with the state, but they are kind of their own entity, right? They have the ability to make those laws and kind of change from what's going on around them. It's pretty interesting, and it really seems like they're gonna be pushing the drive to switch over to payments for themselves.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think more initiatives that happen at a local level, which was the whole point of bringing this up, is that if you're listening to this now or listening to it later on YouTube or Spotify or iHeartRadio or wherever it is that you're hearing this, and you're feeling like you don't really have the ability to move countries, you don't have to move countries. All you have to do is move your community members together and convince your local mayor to start getting paid in, you know, Bitcoin or Dogecoin or whatever it is you want them to get paid in. But to have a local conversation to make changes at a local grassroots level, and your city of 5,000 people or 15,000 people or 800 people can be part of this whole sweeping revolution. It doesn't have to be, you know, the European Union or nothing.
Right. And as a matter of fact, I mean, I don't know exactly how the European Union is going to handle that stuff, but here in the United States, it's kind of the states that dictate. So as they start moving, the federal government is usually slower behind them because it's a much larger, bigger entity. So it moves at a slower pace, but it will reflect generally what the states are doing. So it's pretty interesting for sure. And it's definitely a power move, right? Like, no, we're going to take it and let's get it going. And that, to me, that's kind of what they're saying is, let's get this ball rolling.
Truly. And as individual cities and major tourist destinations, more and more and more of them come on, and of course countries and cities that have no other choice but to try to do something different economically in order to escape the shackles which they're bound, it's at some point in time that tipping point gets met, and then all falls in. And I wonder if we've already crossed that tipping point.
Yeah, and you wonder how many states and local municipalities are working in the background, just regional authorities, and actually investing in cryptos to stabilize their cities, right? To account for inflation in their own budgets.
Yeah, and to put into perspective, the mayors that we're talking about receiving Bitcoin payments, cryptocurrency payments, are the city of New York, New York City, and also Miami. So it's not like tiny cities or anything like that.
Yep. Yep. As New York and Miami go, on the East Coast is kind of the way that, you know, when LA does something on the West Coast, it tends to move in. I think you'll see the same thing here. So in the next headline, Core, that caught my attention was Ethereum moves from POW to POS. And I thought, wow, that's nice. But POW, proof of work, a lot like we talked about with Bitcoin, right, where it's the proof of work that shows that it's done. It's really energy intensive, over to proof of stake. And they have just launched this on a test net, right, on a fork net with Ethereum, but it's kind of live so it can be seen. And it's there, you know, it's just one move closer to the Ethereum 2.0 upgrade, which, you know, has been, people have been waiting for this for quite a while, right? There's been some alluded to promise, not promises, but some things alluded to, like gas fees are going to drop. So it's pretty exciting. That will be pretty cool when that comes to fruition.
Absolutely. And I, quite frankly, think that this is a critical juncture for Ethereum as it's trying to compete with Binance, because if you're looking over the last 3-4 years or so, my goodness, Binance is coming at them.
Yeah. Oh yeah. Hard. Yeah. Yeah. No doubt. No doubt. And you've got to wonder, they had to have seen it coming, right? Because the Ethereum gas fees are just prohibitive on a lot of things. So they had to see this coming, and that's why they're working feverishly to get it out.
Truly. And it's also interesting to ask the question, though, what's going to happen to a lot of those auxiliary chains that were solving the problem of gas fees on the Ethereum network, like Polygon, for instance. So if Ethereum gets to where it's able to move to successfully the proof of stake and to get the gas cost down in the range of, let's say, Binance, where you might be paying 8 cents a transaction or 12 cents a transaction, then all of a sudden Polygon's use case isn't quite as powerful if you add all the tools that Ethereum has. I mean, you know, Polygon's really just built on top of the Ethereum chain, but nonetheless, there's a lot of other support networks that I think will have to come up with other ways for themselves to be valuable.
So, well, what are you proposing there? That once Ethereum changes and lowers the fees so much, there won't be the use for the other ones?
Well, I don't think that the use. So at the end of the day, anytime you're looking at any kind of investment on an individual level, you have to ask what's the unique selling proposition or use case? What's the use case that is necessary and valuable to the world? And if your previous use case was that you were able to allow for Ethereum transactions, but you did that at a very low cost, you allowed people to interact in that way, basically on top of that chain, then you need to have a different kind of use case. You need to have a different, you know, unique proposition. You need to have something like an ecosystem that you build that allows for the development of DeFi platforms or DAOs or NFTs, or maybe an artist community that builds around a certain type of project or whatever it might be. You're going to have to pivot. Now, granted, those that are already successful, that they have the money, the resources, the community, I would imagine that they are, or at least should be, making those moves now.
Yeah, and you would think that they're lining up to make those for sure. So another interesting one, Corey, another headline, not quite an in-depth of a story, but Binance will make a $108 million investment into French crypto startups and ecosystems. And it says that they've announced the $108 million investment into the ecosystems, along with a partnership with Paris-based startup. And that is going to be, that's a huge investment, right? Binance makes some big moves right now.
Oh my goodness, Binance is making some massive moves. They're making the kind of moves of somebody who just, I don't know, had $300 billion worth of market cap handed to them and then just said, hey, wait a second, this could all disappear in an instant. I'm going to take every bit of this and I'm going to put it somewhere where I can have a better chance of being relevant 10 years from now.
Yeah, and you know, that's I think it's a brilliant move on their part, and I think that it's going to keep them relevant. You know, because they definitely made some moves to take over, but if you look at, you know, you had Bitcoin, then you had Ethereum, right, which was the next, kind of the next biggest competitor. And, you know, it seems like Binance is creeping up on Ethereum in the amount of use around the world.
Oh, they sure are. They're coming up hard and fast. And if you watch Binance, this is my perspective of their play. Binance seems to be really, really focused in developing new markets. It's what they're trying to do is compete by creating markets where there weren't markets before. They did that with the lower cost of transactions. They did that with creating these incubators. They are doing that with creating these educational trading courses where you can get engaged in how to offer Binance services. It's Binance is clearly looking around at the world and going, okay, if we're going to get more pie, we can try to either eat the pie that exists and try to compete over the slices in here, or we can make the pie even bigger. And then as the pie gets bigger, we can have our substantial percentage of that grow. And
that seems to be their strategy, isn't it? Just to make the pie bigger.
Yeah, make the pie bigger and to basically have the, if you were to, I would be curious to see of the markets that they have created, of the new ecosystems that they have been in the forefront of fostering, and for instance, now and in the future, how much of that pie they have.
Right.
So for market cap, they're coming up fast on Ethereum and on they go, but for their sectors, for the parts of the country, the parts of the world that are unbanked and that needed those transaction fees and the ability to interact differently on the blockchain, different types of programming, different types of ability to be financially stable, relevant, empowered. Those people, I think that they came in through Binance, and I wonder if they're going to leave. I think they might have been converted from the start.
Yeah, and just stay in it, right?
Yep.
Yeah, so. It seems like a very strong possibility. So, Corey, the next story that we've got here, I think is probably the biggest one of the day. And this is a new crypto card by Nexo allows users to pay without selling Bitcoin. So this goes back to a conversation that we had maybe a couple weeks ago, that in order to maintain both assets, if you borrow against something, if you have an asset and you borrow against it, at the end of it, you've maintained your asset, right? Instead of selling it off to buy something, you just position it to be your collateral. And that's what's happened now. And so they've teamed up, and then you move down a couple stories, and basically the real story comes out is Nexo's and MasterCard launch as the world's first crypto-backed payment card. That is exciting stuff right there.
Oh my gosh, yes it is. And I also think it's funny because whenever you click on the link to read it, at least for me, it's like Binance Futures, which is a whole separate subsidiary of Binance. Like, so if you're looking into the futures and you can kind of like derivatives tradings and things like that. So Binance everywhere once again. But nonetheless, looking at this, how amazing is it that you now have a card that doesn't have any minimum repayments? It doesn't have take foreign exchange fees for up as long as you do it under $21,700. And like traditional credit cards, it's able to be used as a virtual and a physical card. So like all the things you'd like about a credit card and also all the things you don't like about a credit card while being engaged in a non-fiat system. It's like all the things that make you feel like you need to keep cash around for. Yep. We're starting to lose all those arguments.
Yeah, and how long do those arguments last? I mean, I guess it's going to have to be another probably 10 or 15 years, right, before that kind of that full transformation is done. I mean, it could take longer than that, but I think about it in relation to ages, right? So there's a lot of people that are 65, that have a lot of money and aren't interested. They're like, I don't want to hear anything about it. So I wonder how long it is before that whole transformation is going to take place. It's going to be really interesting to sit back and watch, right? We got a front row seat to it.
We sure do. And also too, I think this is really important to mention here. If I'm reading this correctly, it says it starts and stays at 0% APR.
Hold on. That's what that deserves. That's awesome. And that's the power of borrowing. That's the power really of borrowing against your own assets, right? Your own collateral. And that's the power that you get from that. Because basically that says that they're just going to take transaction fees.
That is mind-boggling. So
isn't it?
Compare that to 18%, 20%, 24, 26% APR compounded annually, year after year after year, with whatever balance you let transfer over year after year. If you had like a running balance of, let's say, $10,000 on your credit cards over the course of a 20-year period of time, which most people do, at least in the States, where they have this credit card that's just, you know, sometimes it's 25, sometimes it's 7,000, but they're always kind of living off the credit card. You have this $10,000 every single year, compound interest, like the fees that you pay off of that. It's astronomical.
Yeah.
Like, go to 0% now. 0%.
Yeah.
I don't really know. Like, I mean,
it almost doesn't make sense, right? When you think about it in the lens of a typical credit card situation, it almost doesn't make sense until you understand that it's being collateralized by you, right? Like you're adding something to it. It's almost like having a prepaid credit card in some sense, right? Because you're putting something up and there's really no risk on their side. So the reward can be much smaller because the risk is so much lighter.
Truly, it's much more like that family bank that we were talking about just last podcast.
Yeah. Yeah, that is
family bank.
Yeah, that is something that is something we should really do one evening on that theory of family banks and kind of understanding that a little bit more and maybe looking into trusts and how some of that works. Be really interesting to go through for sure. So there was a couple honorable mentions in here, Corey. One of them is Starbucks CEO says that they will get involved in NFTs this year. I don't really know what that looks like, right, for Starbucks to get into NFTs. I don't know. It'll be interesting for sure.
Oh, yeah. That said, I think that kind of money with that kind of brand, and what I mean by brand is it's kind of like Nike getting involved with Artifact, which is a big thing that happened a couple months back. With NFTs, they could have a lot of fun with that. You could have exclusive experiences based off the NFTs you have. Like, for instance, Starbucks has a members card that you can be a part of, and you get different rewards based off of how high up tier you are. You could have that except with NFTs, and you could have exclusive experiences. You put up your phone, like, or for that matter, you have the Apple AR glasses, you look around, you see a completely different store inside based off of what tier you are. And you could have different coupons or ads or specials for you, just for you, inside of that store on your Apple glasses, based off of whatever tier member that you are, based off the NFT that you own. And the list just goes on and on and on. And this isn't like fairy tale stuff, that the technology for the AR glasses and the technology for the NFTs, we're talking year.
Yeah, I want some AR glasses.
Oh, gosh, how cool would that be?
Yeah. That would be awesome.
You know what I think the coolest thing about NFTs will be is that we can have like exclusive experiences and interact with those exclusive experiences around other people who aren't seeing those things, so we can look entirely crazy. You just wear your glasses, you're talking to something that nobody else sees, and it's just like full dialogue, back and forth. It's just, you're interacting with this world completely, everybody else is oblivious to it.
Yep. Yep, it will be interesting for sure, because you get to see have your own unique experience in there. That'll be pretty cool. So one more honorable mention before we get to our last story. Terra bought another 100 million worth of Bitcoin, making it the 18th largest holder in the world. And this is basically the UST stablecoin bought $100 million worth. And I'm assuming they put that just into their treasury, you know, to make it a stablecoin.
Yeah, I mean, quite frankly, if you wanted to make a more stable coin, would you really want to stabilize it off of the U.S. dollar? I mean,
or any dollars.
Any dollars.
You go. Yeah, we talk about U.S. dollars because, you know, obviously we're from the U.S., but this really applies to any dollar around the world. They all have inflationary, you know, times, and that's kind of where we're at. I think it's pretty much worldwide right now, right? The inflation is happening kind of everywhere.
Well, so quite frankly, on that note, very little bit about education on this. Whenever you have a debt-based economy, which to my knowledge, all fiat currencies are designed in, you can't have a deflationary currency, because that will actually can entirely destroy your economic structure. Mm-hmm. So you have to inflate in order to pay off the debts and the debt burdens and the interest accumulated in that. Like, the trade-off is that you have to constantly inflate or lose the value of your currency over time. It's the only way that you can allow for the purchasing power that's beyond the resources you currently had at the time, whenever you went from whatever asset-backed currency you had to a fiat. So by design, every fiat currency, to my knowledge, has to inflate over time, or otherwise the entire economy will implode on its own debts.
Yep, that's right. I mean, that is a debt-based economy. Welcome to the world, folks.
Yeah, welcome to the world. And it has to its point, though, it's created some really beautiful things. I mean, there are some amazing things that came about that wouldn't have happened. It's not all bad.
No.
It's not all bad, but it's more complicated than just saying it's bad or good. And
it's not all bad. And, you know, as if you look at it really closely, you could look at it and say this is sinister. But if you examine it even closer than that, you could say that it's brilliant, because it has allowed an economic growth around the world that had been unseen until fiat currencies came around, because you could only, you know, before then, a nation could only borrow, you could only spend what you could carry in gold or what you could back up in gold. So it really kind of stifled a lot of economic movement. And then when you had the advent of the fiat system, it exploded. So, you know, I think that there's a lot of good that's come out of it. But it could be a messy ending if people don't prepare.
Yeah, I think it's a messy ending if people don't recognize that they're not supposed to hold fiat currency. They never were supposed to.
Right. Well, that's the part that they leave out.
Yeah, that's the part that they leave out. It's supposed to be the thing that you hold for just long enough to get from one asset to another asset.
Yeah.
So, like, you get paid in the fiat, and then you move it over into something as quickly as you can that will pay you back in time, or at least hold its value over time.
Yeah, yeah. It's an important part of it that most of us don't understand, and personally, that's the part of the system that I don't appreciate. Is that there's some of it that is just not talked about, so that people don't really ask those kind of questions. Because you start asking those questions like, well, you know, how do we get out of this? And then the answer is not very good.
Yeah. Yeah. The answer is complicated. Let's just say that.
Yeah.
And that's what this podcast is for, is to have those complicated conversations and to try to come up with good answers, because complaining about bad things is not going to do any of us any good.
Yep, so, no doubt. So the next domino to fall, the Brazilian state announces incoming approval of Bitcoin law.
Incoming approval.
Yep.
I am not surprised.
Yeah, no, not at all. Not at all. And, you know, Brazil is a huge economy. You know, it's massively populated, and it's a huge economy. So we will see, you know, and I think that probably will do provide a big boost to their economy. And, you know, it might sound silly, man, but this is one of the most exciting things that I think is coming up, because I think that all of us, no matter where you live in the world, you can do what you can personally do to prepare for what's happening. And I think that it is pretty amazing that we're in a time in history that other nations that have not had everything, all the luxuries of life, so to speak, are in a very unique time to turn all of that around and to be an economic powerhouse. And I think that that's exciting to watch some of these nations say, yep, us please, we'll adopt it right now and jump ahead of the game. And I think that's pretty awesome.
Truly. So in that way, Brazil, I think, is well poised if they were to make a move between the amount of talent that they've been bringing in. So for those who've been watching, Brazil has been pulling in some talent in the tech space. And for being where they're at in South America, which hasn't been traditionally very powerful economically, they are starting to take an upward trajectory in a very turbulent area of the world. And they've got the resources.
Yeah.
Clearly. I mean, if they use them properly, that's a whole nother thing, but, you know, economically, environmentally, et cetera. But the point being is, looks like they're making the right moves, and getting involved in Bitcoin and everything else is clearly another 10, 20, 30, 40, 50, 100 year play. So that's all you can do as a nation is try to make those kinds of decisions.
Yeah. Yep. That's what you can do. So, guys, we're going to jump out of news. There's been some, that's a lot of news today. But we're going to jump over to what we've got it set up this evening for an educational spot, right? And we, last night we went over different kinds of DAOs, kind of their utilities, what you would use them for, and different structures of DAOs. And tonight we're going to dive into a couple DAOs, and we've got some stuff that we're going to throw up here in the podcast chat so that we can all look at the graphs and kind of go along. And then we can get educated together. You know, DAOs are simple and they're also complicated. So we'll dig into a little bit of both sides. Before we go there, you guys, we are at show 28 as it pertains to the whitelist count. And we have two people at the top, Jeremy P. and Kirby, both checking in with 27, with a bunch at 26, Ooh. Some at 25, but nice work.
Yeah, you all are awesome. My yeah. goodness. I'm surprised I've showed up to that many podcasts. Yeah, that's amazing. Yeah, and yeah. also too on that note to not lose track, there is some amazing conversation going on in the podcast chat per usual. I think it might be good for us yeah. to maybe have a bit of a break in between news, which we keep on trying to get a little bit like less time on. But gosh, there's just so much going on and so much to talk about with it. But yeah, going through the podcast chat here, gas fees killing me. Yeah, B-Man, killing us all. The DOI gas fees, yeah, that's actually why we set it up on Binance to start with. We had a big conversation about it, where people could get in it and trade it and move it. And yeah, especially those
Binance
areas.
Is as cheap as we get right now, isn't it?
Oh, gosh, yeah. Whenever we're doing the airdrops, it was somewhere between 9 and 12 cents a transaction, which thank goodness, because we had 134,000 right. people. Who signed up for the airdrop because, but yeah, nonetheless, I mean, a dime a transaction is pretty good whenever you can send any, it doesn't matter whether or not you're sending five DOI or 5 million. So now going further back up into there, got Zuckerberg. Ha, I don't know what the conversation's about yet, but oh, market, just read that. Mark is planning to increase the fees for creators now. So Meta is designing set to sit on everything in the metaverse at the same time. Yeah, I'm sure. That said, it clearly has worked in the past. Apple increased their fees quite a bit on, you know, if you're to be on the Apple iTunes store. People still pay it. So as long as they can make money, I guess they can just juice it as far as they can.
Yeah, inflation hits everything, doesn't it?
Yeah. Yeah. Apparently, you can't drink a Starbucks NFT. Not yet, but they're working on it.
Hey, hold on. Whoever knew that the metaverse was gonna have inflation hit it?
Right. Yeah. And I wonder if the NFTs will be $6 like their coffee. Oh, I bet they'll probably be 60.
Oh, yeah.
Probably even yeah, more.
These are exclusive.
Yeah. Oh, 40%. Sherlock Shelley says here, 40% is the interest in India per annum. So for those of you who haven't already, so if you forget everything we talked about in this podcast, the first thing you should do is get yourself like a Coinbase card or some kind of other crypto-backed credit card. Stop paying interest. Yes, it's going to work a bit more like a prepaid card, but what happens is you're investing, the things you're already purchasing, you would already invest, you can use those and spend that off of your Coinbase card, and you don't have the interest.
Do any of them give me air miles?
Well, I promise you, your air miles are not worth nearly the interest you're paying.
That's right. Well, I'm not going to be flying anywhere anytime soon, I don't think, anyways. So it's fine.
Yeah. So it's fine. So, yeah. Good evening, everyone. It's nice to see you in here. I'm seeing a lot of highs and hellos. And so I think that's, you all are fantastic. Just good conversation. So I'm going to drop in the first bit here. Yeah, you get 4% back. So Manifest King Apogee says 4% back on XLM with the Coinbase card. Yeah, actually, that's exactly the one that I use too. I get the 4% back. I'm always, because you can get 1% back on Bitcoin. And so I'm a fan of Stellar. So that's what I've stuck to.
Interesting.
And Yeah, it is super interesting. But yeah, you can do Bitcoin, you can do Ethereum, you can do a couple of them. And depending on which one you choose, you can choose what you get your cash back in as well. So that's the way to go for sure. I'm glad that you added that manifest. Super important. So if you haven't already, stop paying credit card interest, get yourself a Coinbase card, or if it's available in your country, a Nexo card or something else like that. Like, stop paying 20, 30, 40%. India, 40%.
Yeah,
my gosh, can you imagine 40% compound interest? What that would look like?
Now, was he saying 40% on credit cards?
Yeah.
Oh my goodness.
Yeah. So, can you? Oh my gosh! Like, if you held a balance. Oh my!
India is stiff on some percentages, right? Like 30% on crypto investments because they consider it gambling.
Yeah, and then 1% at the source.
Yeah.
No matter what you do, like win, loss, or anything, it doesn't matter. 1%. And you get charged 1%, and you get charged 1%. Yeah, India's tough. My goodness.
Ooh. Yeah, well, you know, let's don't get back into India news. But it seems like they're going to have to adjust that, right? Because how are they going to keep up? I could sidetrack us for 30 minutes. Let's don't. I'm sorry.
Yeah, it's easy to. It looks like a lot of people like Stellar here. Yeah, definitely XLM twins, and we're twinsing over here. And yeah, they are a nonprofit. That's why I like them too. There's definitely a lot we could have a whole podcast about Stellar. So that said, full circle, I'll drop it again. This is for those who weren't here in the last podcast, CoinMarketCap, CoinGecko, places like that. Will do a market share analysis, and you can see the rankings of every type of cryptocurrency, crypto asset, and they'll rank them. And you can also separate them by category, like DAOs. So what I did is I picked the most common one, the one that most people are probably going to be more familiar with, and that's Uniswap. And I dropped a link to the Uniswap on CoinMarketCap. So we could actually go through Uniswap a little bit, talk about what it is, talk about how you use it, talk about what its use, you know, what their case in the market is, and kind of let's talk about what it's done pricing wise.
Let's do it. I'm clicking in there right now.
So clicking in there right now. So for those of you who clicked in there, you'll see this. But for those who haven't or can't, we're going to walk through it so that way you can visualize it with us. You'll be here in live time. So clicking on it, it was at $9.69. a Uniswap token, and then it went up to $9.70 while we looked at it, because we were looking at it, nice. Of course. Yeah, that was for us. But so it's at $9.70 a token, and that over the last day, you can see there's been a lot of movement. It's from 931 to 970. This token has moved. And in the last 7 days, it's moved a lot too, but it moved up. It was all the way at 1050, it's like 1050 something or other. And then, yeah, it went down all the way down to 8. You can run along the little chart. Yeah, 896. A lot of movement here, which for those who have the heart and the stomach for it, you can be on one side or the other of the movement. If you know how to do that well, I mean, good for you. Me personally, I would say just hodl. Buy something you believe in and hang on to it forever. But it is nice to see. So those who can't see this, if you scroll down just a tad, you'll see where it says overview, market, historical data, holders. They have the ability on overview to click on a Uniswap to USD chart, and you can click 1 day, 7 day, 1 month, 3 month, 1 year, year to date, and all time. So this allows you, if you kind of click and you can test those different things, you can see that as far as massive 1000x tokens, Uniswap was never one of those. It was never one of those 1000x tokens. I mean, at one point in time, it got all the way up to $43 a token. And, you know, where it's at now comparatively is a lot less. But it also, too, never started like $6.90 or something like that a token.
Started at $6.90?
Yeah, so it wasn't like one of those ones that was like 0.00000000, and then it went up to $6.
Right.
So Uniswap was also not designed to do that. It was really meant as a way for governance of the Uniswap ecosystem, and also as a reward for initial liquidity providers and those people who had kind of put liquidity into Uniswap.
Well, now, in a lot of ways, that's kind of how the DAO is set up in the Dogecoin, right? Because it ultimately is a governance token.
It is.
Yeah. So we can see another example here of a governance token and how it gained value by being a governance token. So that's encouraging.
It is. And one of the cool things that everyone's going to want to understand whenever it comes to DAOs, especially, because DAOs can be used for a number of different reasons, as we had in our podcast last night. We're talking about all the different things you can do with DAOs. But one of the main unifying factors is the fact that there's a treasury. There's some kind of like pool of funds in the middle of all of it. So one of the most important things that you're going to want to be aware of is the total value locked, or TVL. So the total value locked shows how much is locked in that protocol, in that treasury, in that DAO. And it can be different for what that total value locked is. Like it can actually be like treasury that's like an investment DAO, that total value locked has a lot more value to the ecosystem, to the coin, than it is just like coins locked up for liquidity by other liquidity providers, and they're just making a small fee off of that. Does that make sense, yes. Phil, whenever I say that?
Yes.
So, by the way, podcast chat, if that doesn't make sense to anyone or you want me to elaborate or us to elaborate, please do, because now is the time for education to be educationable.
Don't ask me to elaborate on that. I'm not going to elaborate past what you just did. They got to know, nice. Corey.
Yep. Looking at this... talking about the total value locked, you can also click on DeFi Llama. DeFi Llama has an API where you can see the total value locked for a lot of different DAO treasuries. And of course, too, just like Jack is saying here, Jackal in the podcast chat, you know, talk a bit about the market cap. So the market cap, there's two different numbers here on market cap. There's the market cap itself, and then there's the fully diluted market cap. What's the difference, Phil?
I don't know. I'm not exactly sure.
So the fully diluted market cap is what the market cap would be if the exact same price of the token was taken all the way out to all of the tokens being in circulation. So let's say that you had 10 tokens that were worth $1 a piece, but there's only 3 of them in circulation. So your market cap would be $3 because you have 3 tokens at $1. Your fully diluted market cap would be $10. But those other 7 tokens aren't in circulation yet. And whenever they do, it's not to say that that token will stay at $1. Maybe it might go up, it might go down. The reason why it could go down is because of the fact that you now have more tokens in supply, depending on how the market values that. It could go up because over that period of time, as the tokens came into supply, the impact, the import of the community increased.
Okay.
Greater than the value of the tokens that became into circulation. So this is really relevant for those who have followed along with the pre-sale we have on PinkSale, is their API doesn't allow for them to see locked tokens in wallets. So you have to go on BSC scan, Binance scan, in order to see that. And you can see it's locked up per the smart contract. And it was designed that way from the start. But what they do is they show all of the tokens unlocked. So it shows as the market cap as being 10 times more than it actually is, because 90% of the tokens are locked.
So they're showing the fully diluted market cap.
They're showing only the fully diluted market cap, where they'd normally show the market cap, because they don't have any way where you put in a circulating supply API in there. And the only way they can see it is if it's in the smart contract itself, not if it's in wallets and it vests out and unlocks over time.
I see.
So that said, by the time you go from PinkSale to like legitimate exchanges, like, or larger, I can't say, not that they're not legitimate, but larger exchanges, then you have circulating supply APIs. But that will be the difference between those. The market cap is however many tokens are in circulation multiplied times the amount of value per token. Fully diluted market cap would be the amount of value per token multiplied times every token that could possibly go into circulation.
Got it. Eventually. That makes sense.
Cool. Now, that said, what I'm going to do here as well is I'm going to, just for reference, because we want to talk about a couple different DAOs, I'm going to... This thing is a fun read. You'll all be really excited whenever you see this thing. And for those who aren't going to look at it, well, give you the good run through on the podcast here. This is a Google Drive link that I created. You should all be able to see it, I hope, for the white paper for Uniswap. And it reads like a light, fun, summer casual kind of conversational white paper. Right off the bat, you can instantly understand what they're trying to do and why. I mean, it takes like 3 seconds to figure out where they're going with all this, doesn't it, Phil?
My gosh, they got algebra equations at the bottom. I'm out.
They've got algebra equations everywhere.
There's math with letters in it.
That's funny. Yeah. Yeah. They could have probably done a blended approach. I understand why they did this. So for those trying to jump into this, just like in one of our previous podcasts, try to get engaged in projects that are within your circle of competence, that where you feel comfortable and things that you can confidently say, hey, I understand what they're doing with this, or I could, with enough time, understand where they're going with this. So I know whether or not what they're presenting to me is really all that amazing and world-changing, or if it's just some kind of...
Actually is what it is.
Yeah, it actually is what it is. So clearly Uniswap was going straight for the technical people and no marketing flair or buzz. There's definitely no Shiba Inu wolf paper going on this one. It's just, it is just clearly algebra in your face, liquidity providers, concentrated liquidity. It's the mathematics here. Now, so what, to disseminate what in the world is on this white paper, what they're saying here is that there is a very intelligent formula that they've created that allows people who are liquidity providers, which are people who own a lot of a pairing of a coin, to, let's say, XLM to Doge, just created a random pair. They've got enough where they can create a pool where people getting into Doge can get the XLM, and people getting into XLM with XLM can get into Doge, and they can swap back and forth. That's called a pairing. And so liquidity just means that there's funds. So think of funds as two different types of cryptos paired together, liquidity pairing. And to do that, though, you have to have the fees low enough that the person would want to come into Uniswap and go, okay, I want to trade my Doge for XLM or my XLM for Doge. You need to have the fees low enough that they do that there, but you also need to have the incentive high enough that somebody would put their XLM and Doge pairing here as opposed to anywhere else on the internet where they could do what they call yield farming or any of that kind of, where they can make money off of their money. They're trying to bring them here. And so they've created some very interesting algorithms for how they can play both sides of that equation to make it viable for the swappers and the liquidity providers. And they use lots of letters and numbers to describe how they are going to do that.
Yes, they did.
So does that make sense though, Phil? Like, not digging into the white paper for obvious reasons?
Yes. Yes, the obvious reason we wouldn't dig into the white paper is because we can't understand it. Is that what you meant?
Yeah, Manifest put in a really funny bit in the podcast chat. It's good marketing for guys like me who are too stupid to know if the math is correct and have to take their word for it.
Yeah. And
you can just make up all your own math. These abstract equations. Like, you could literally copy paste the math from Goodwill Hunting and just put it on.
I mean, listen, Corey, to his point, I'm pretty impressed by the white paper, and really, I don't understand any of it. So,
yeah, I mean,
I think he's right.
I mean, yeah, maybe it is great marketing. Maybe it's the best marketing ever. Yeah.
Well,
I don't know, because the token price hasn't really done well. So,
yeah, very interesting. Quite complicated, but you look at what they're doing. What they're doing is complicated, right? I'm not making light of it, but what they're doing is a very complicated algorithm, and there's a lot at stake there. So I'm glad someone did some fancy math.
Well, it's well deserved, and it's appropriate for what it is and what it was used for. And clearly they are the largest DAO. So I can't say that they're not successful, because clearly they are.
Yeah.
By market cap, they're short of, you know, the ape coin, you know, coming up, they're clearly the most successful to date. Now, that said, to skip past the good old the apes and go straight to Aave. So I put in another link for Aave, which I think is a pretty interesting one for us to talk about.
Yeah, we've heard about this one before.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So I forget where it's at on the list of DAOs. I think it's like 4 or 5 on the list of DAOs. It's number 49 on the list of all the crypto assets listed on CoinMarketCap. Right now, Aave price is $178.84. It has gone up 8% today. So that's interesting. So it's pretty close to its high for the day. Looking at it over the course of the last 7 days, it has been going down pretty hard. It was at over 200 just 7 days ago. And it had dipped all the way down to, gosh, what is this? 157. So, oh, and then I guess, yeah, 157. So that's a pretty heavy dip. Somebody took a 25% haircut.
Yeah, especially if they were nervous and sold.
Yeah, especially if they're nervous and sold. Now, if they hung on to it, or if they bought at 157 and went back up, and that was just yesterday, or no, 2 days ago. So 2 days ago, in the last 2 days, you know, you could have made a 20% or 17-18% return, looks like off the top of my head, off of getting into that. Once again, I don't advise anybody to day trade cryptos, but
no, oh, man, too much stress. So Corey, I have a question. When we look at this page that we're looking at, and we look at the market cap, and we look at the fully diluted market cap, they're way closer to balance. What does that tell us?
Yeah, that tells us that the max supply, which you can actually see this, if you go all the way to the right, you can see the circulating supply is 13,680,000 Aave, just roughly, which is 86% of the total 16 million, that total supply.
Okay.
So what that means is 86% are already out into the into the market. So whenever you think about DAOs, we obviously took a much longer term approach with our DAO and made it over a 19-year period, or an over 19-year period, where it would unlock at minimum, short of us putting things in cold storage and things like that that we've talked about as well. But nonetheless, point being is, as they run out, then you now have to generate funds through business use case, which is an appropriate thing to do, just like you would with stocks and with a business. And I guess with stocks in a business, you could do share buybacks and everything like that. You could probably burn them, or whatever, creative ways where you could probably take the circulating supply percentage down. I think that there's probably interesting things you could do with that. But nonetheless, that those are the metrics to watch. Now, for those who want to dig into the Aave white paper, yeah, and the taxes are way too high on day trading. And you also get killed coming in and out of pairs, which is why people on Uniswap, the liquidity providers, that they're making the money. I'm responding to something that was in the podcast chat there. B-Man put on their taxes too high. So for day trading, because the people making the money are the ones in the middle. So here is the white paper for Aave, for those who are interested to see. Now, if you click this one, it's not as hard of a read. I thought it might be fun to start with the heavy one up at the top. And then from there, you'll actually see this one actually takes you to a GitHub link. It's clearly written. Breaks down, has some pictures there. Nice graphics. Essentially, what Aave is it's a DeFi protocol that allows depositors to people to create liquidity. People to deposit assets and borrowers to borrow and then pay interest back to the protocol and to the depositors. So pretty simple on the surface. The trick is how do you do that successfully? How do you ensure, how do you factor in for risk? How do you factor in for transfer costs? You know, what the appropriate amount is for how high is too high for the borrower to not want to do it, and how low is too low for the depositor to not want to do it. So the white paper goes through all the mechanisms for how they figure that out, where the lending pools come from, you know, how they transfer from their stable coin, the DAI, which for those who aren't familiar, that's their stable coin that they kind of interact through and with, and how you can kind of get at in and out of other pairings. So it's, yeah.
Yeah, until the 0% credit card's barking on their heels.
Yeah, yeah. I thought you were going to say this.
Changes everything, right?
Yeah, well, I think the difference is still with the 0% credit card is you have to have the assets it's kind of like the prepaid. It's like a family bank. You have to have the assets to put in first, whereas something like this, somebody else brings the liquidity to the table, and you're still borrowing a dollar whenever you have zero.
Okay. So, that makes sense. More like traditional borrowing,
but in the DeFi space. Now, this has been a really interesting protocol to watch. And for those of you who, once again, Aave, that there was a really hot point for Aave where they were at like, 600 or something like that. Yeah, 632 back in May 17th of last year. And clearly that's quite a drop.
That was the time to sell.
But at the same time, it doesn't mean that they haven't been valuable, and they've also still stuck around. And so, like a lot of things, because they're really only all time, they've really only been around since 2020. I mean, so it's like a year and 6 months, like October of 2020. So if you get a long enough lens, it's sometimes easy to see the peaks and valleys of something from the course of weeks or months. But if Bitcoin and Ethereum and crypto in general has taught us anything, step far enough back and look over the course of like 2 and 3 and 5 and 10 year periods of time, and just ask yourself whether or not the project you're supporting can sustain that.
Yeah, and you kind of have to, right? To be fair about it, because it's difficult when you start getting in so close to it, and you see those daily fluctuations, because that's something that crypto has taught us, and I think it's one of the reasons that people are reluctant, because it's volatile daily, right? Where we see other markets that are more mature and they figured out how to stabilize that, those daily fluctuations. So people look at it and they're like, oh, I can't lose 20%. Well, the next day you can recover it all. And often they just go up and down, up and down, up and down. So it can be scary if you're just watching it and you're counting every penny. Or maybe not scary is the right word. But
scary is the right word. Yeah, treacherous.
Yep.
Yeah. You know who does make money whenever things go up and down?
Who?
People in the middle.
Yep.
The traders. Like not the exchanges. Because whenever people are selling, they're afraid. Whenever they're buying, they're afraid of missing out for greed, for fear of, missing the up. Whenever they're selling, they're afraid of losing everything and not having what they need to sustain themselves, or that they've made a poor decision. But nonetheless, that fear tends to drive a lot of those actions.
Oh yeah.
And in the middle,
it drive it.
Yeah, it's kind of like there's two cities in the same country, and every single time you go back and forth, back and forth, back and forth, back and forth, you're thinking that, I should be over here, I should be over there. The train company in the middle is like, pay your fares.
That's a good analogy.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's so good. Well, Corey, we are rapidly approaching an hour. We're just teasing it right now. But this has been a great informational segment. I learned something. I told you guys we were going to learn this one together.
Truly. Now, for those of you who haven't seen it in the podcast chat, there is the attendance poll. Throw it in there if you're there. Say hello. And in closing, I think that we have had a couple other ones that we could have talked about, but I think we could do a brief version of ENS. I can give the 30 seconds view of this one, and you can check this out because I really like this project, although once again, it hasn't done super well, but I think it's a cool project. It's the Ethereum name service, so ENS. Essentially, a brief version of that is ENS allows you to give shortened names for complicated wallet addresses and smart contracts. So everything on the blockchain has this big complicated address, right? So what if it wasn't complicated? What if it was just Corey.eth or Phil.eth? Yep. And to that point, actually, I have CoreyFico.eth, and Phil, you have PhilWard.eth, though you're not.
I do.
Yeah. So check out ENS. It's super cool. If you want to be able to give somebody your wallet, instead of giving them some weird gobbledygook thing, you could just be like, hey, it's Jane.eth or whatever it might be. And then they can type Jane.eth into MetaMask or Coinbase or whatever it is that they're going to send it to you with, type in the address, and pops right up, as long as it's on the Ethereum blockchain.
Yeah, and I think that actually this project has a lot of room for growth, because the percentage of the population that's involved in crypto now, opposed compared to the amount that says that they will be involved in it. Like they see that it's coming, right? And they're going to have this part of their retirement strategies and so on. This has got so much room to grow, so much room.
It truly does. And also too, by the way, this is not a forecast, but it's just something to say. Ethereum name service dipped a lot in price. I think because people were thinking about building on other platforms, but if Ethereum can make the play, mm-hmm. and especially if they're trying to make the play against Binance to bring low cost, Ethereum can bring the vision of people being able to build anything on top of it at a low fee. If you can build every smart contract down to like you're a landscaper and this is the contract that you interact with your clients on to you've got a local chess club and this is the agreement that you fill out before you do this and all those things, whatever, anytime you have any kind of treasury or any kind of interaction you want to do on the blockchain, you can do that with it costs a couple pennies to interact or less. If Ethereum can bring that vision to life, then people are going to want to have shortened names for everything.
Yeah. Yeah, no doubt. And, you know, to Ethereum's credit, they have some smart cookies over there, right?
They sure do.
And they're working on this, in some ways to save their life, so to speak, because the market is shifting so fast that they're going to have to accomplish their goal or it could do severe damage to them. So I'm pretty sure that they're working hard on it, and I don't think they're going to let us down.
Yeah, I don't think that they'll let us down either. It's so to that point, if you were going to get into ENS, I wonder what might happen if and there'll be a tail. So I don't think that it would be like the same day that Ethereum successfully launched proof of stake that ENS would go up. But what would happen is as people started getting more and more interest in Ethereum again and building on top of it, then things like ENS could go up a lot, specifically for those people who weren't interacting with Ethereum because of the cost of gas, which would be people like who would interact with ENS, who want simple, like, because you can build websites and have simple addresses. So you can have a blockchain and website. We talked about that in another podcast that's hosted on the blockchain, just like you could on the normal space. And you can have a blockchain address for it where it's just kind of like DOIC.E, which, by the way, we have that. It's a treasury wallet. So if you send something to DOIC.ETH as like a donation, it would actually go into the treasury wallet. But point being is something to watch.
Yeah.
Watch Ethereum name service.
Yep, definitely. I see that there's a lot of room for growth there, especially if they make some big announcements.
Yep. And one last thing, and I know we're over by 2 minutes, but I got to drop this in here. For those of you who haven't, last little bit of DAO education, and then we'll move on to other bits. And because we have to, there's just so much to talk about in crypto. For those of you who aren't familiar with DAOs, a great place to actually jump into the DAO voting mechanisms is Snapshot. So snapshot.org is a great place where you can click on that website and you can check out a number of different projects. You can see how many what initiatives they have up for vote, see how many people are voting, what it takes to vote, and you can just scroll through them. You'll see, every single one of the ones that we talked about today are on Snapshot. They allow you to get in there and see the voting mechanisms on Snapshot. So it's a great platform. Check it out.
Yep. Awesome. Very cool. Well, I think that's it for this evening, isn't it?
Well, if it's not it for this evening, then it never will be, because if we could do this forever this pace that things are going.
Yep. So, gang, tomorrow we are not going to be on at 8 a.m., we are going to be on at 9 a.m., and it's going to be a little bit different show. If you want to join us, we are going to be on with Mystic Crypto over at Crypto Hideout, and we're going to be doing an AMA on his show. So we're going to have a little less interaction here, and we probably won't be paying attention to podcast chat because we'll keep our attention directed towards his questions and his audience. But we would love for you to come in and enjoy it nonetheless. So, with that being said, we're going to get out of here. So for myself, Phil Ward, and for Corey Fico, we invite you to be kind to somebody today, and we will see you very soon.
Thanks for listening to the DOI Podcast. If you've enjoyed our time together, please rate and review the podcast. Together, we can achieve a brighter future. Help us bring this information to the world by sharing it with friends and family. The DOI Coin, the crypto coin for the people, by the people.